This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. Most everyone knows that we do have a Jefferson Parish Council District race in District 1, and we are joined by Andrea Manuel, who ran first in the first primary with 5,722 votes. She was followed by Timothy Kerner Jr. with 5,648, and they will meet in the general election runoff on Saturday, May 3rd, 2025, so make sure that you get out to vote that day or early vote. And we'll be telling you when the early voting will start in the days before it for certain. She joins us. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing well. Congratulations to you running first in the first primary. I'd like to give everybody the opportunity to introduce themselves to my listening audience. So take it away.
Well, thank you for having me. Well, as you know, my name is Andrea Manuel. I'm married. I have four children. Been an educator for over 16 years. And I'm a graduate of Xavier University. I'm a lifelong resident of Jefferson Parish. And I learned Spanish in language school as a missionary in Venezuela. I was a foreign missionary for a couple of years. And I'm excited to be here. And I am a resident of Gretna, and I am so excited to have this opportunity.
So what do you see as some of the biggest challenges for District 1?
Well, one thing that is most important to me is to ensure that the entire district is seen, is heard, and is valued. And each community will receive a fair share, their fair share when I am counsel.
So you believe that previous council members did not see or hear or value the entirety of District 1?
Well, you've heard some of the debates and things going on. The most important thing that has been said and heard that there's unfairness in the distribution of funds. I am going to be fair. That's all I could say. I am going to hear, see, and make sure that Gretna receive what they their share, Lafitte receive their Crown Point, the Barataria area, Marrero, Terrytown, Harvey, and Grand Isle.
I asked the same question of Timothy Kerner when he was on last week. I mean, has anybody done a calculation to see, you know, over a period of, let's say, 10 years, what has been spent in the unincorporated areas of this district as opposed to the incorporated areas? I mean, I hear these allegations, but I'm curious whether anyone has done the due diligence to see whether or not it's true. I mean, in my former life as a sheriff, I helped manage traffic control and the whole redevelopment, re-engineering of Terry Parkway, new lights, new streets, you know, a lot of canal work done there throughout that area of the parish and other areas. Same with Lafitte, same with Grand Isle, a lot being done down in those areas. I mean, it's more than just one pot of money that comes down in the way you divvy up that pot. I kind of think you look at things more long term, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, this is very new to me, and I begin to look, but I don't know all that information yet. I've been looking into it, but I'm not you know, I am going to find out and look at everything. When I am privileged to all of the information as a counsel, then I'll be able to give a better, more informed response to that.
So you say that you want to make sure that the entire district is seen, heard, and valued. What other challenges do you think are present in District 1?
Well, there's quite a few challenges in District 1 because each community has its own dynamic and its own thing. But since I've been out and what I can say what I am going to do, I plan to work with my colleagues and the state to address issues affecting all my constituents. We're going to secure funding for the entire district. It is super important to the community that I work with the sheriff and the police department to make sure that our neighborhoods are safer. This is the safest place in the state of Louisiana, and I will not defund the police department. The people want to stay safe. It will be really important for me to have like quarterly meetings with the sheriff and police department to discuss issues, to install crime cameras and critical needs that are in the areas according to their needs. There's just so much. We would be on the phone until tomorrow if we talked more about it. But there's lots of things that need to be done.
You talked about, you know, you've heard the debates, you've heard the allegations. Where do you stand on the Kingfish development?
Well, the most important thing to me, it's been already approved. That is prior to me, as you know. What is most important to me is making sure that the community's voice is heard, I am going to create a committee that's going to make recommendations as far as the discretionary funds. It's in development, and it's going to happen.
So you are going to create a commission to assist you in where to best spend these discretionary funds?
Well, actually, yeah, I'm going to formulate a committee to make recommendations on how the funding should be used. Gretna, Lafitte, Crown Point, Barataria, all of the Marrero, Tarrytown, Harvey, Grand Isle, they all need a voice in how the discretionary funds are to be used, because we have parks and recreation that needs to be looked at in different areas. We have infrastructure improvements, crime fighting measures. There are so many things, and these people need to know where it's done and give recommendations on helping me make the decision on where they go. I just don't want to do it for them.
Right. And how much District 1 has how much money annually in discretionary funds? Do you know?
Well, as you know, I'm not in there yet. I'll know that. I'm not a politician. I'm just a public servant. But I do know that every year, certain amounts, it changes. So once I'm in, I will be able to be privileged to the amount of money that I can set that by discretion.
Is there a particular project in District 1 that you feel that has not been undertaken that needs to be specifically addressed?
I'm not there yet. When I get there and I receive all the information and all the material, I will definitely be able to find ways. Now, what I have done is I've been very active in attending civic association meetings. And at those meetings, I'm finding out things that need to be addressed. And so I'm going to work on making sure that I continue what's already been started and enhance transparency. I need to, you know, foster collaborations with the local organizations and especially implement regular feedback from the citizens' concerns so I can make an effective decision.
In your attendance of these meetings, has there been any kind of consensus relative to an issue that has revealed itself?
Well, there's quite a few, but I'm not prepared to engage in those because I am on the outside looking in. And once I get in, then I can make, when I have an opportunity to make choices, I will address it according to the things that I am aware of, you know, that's on paper.
Well, the question was simply, as you're hearing this, is there consensus as to any particular issue that they all kind of feel like is important in District 1?
Well, there's the firemen, the collaboration of firehouses and things like that, but I still don't know. The brew pub is something that's been talked. But as I said, until I am in my seat, which I will, I cannot make any type of, you know, any. I will address it accordingly once I'm there. But the
why should people?
Is one of the main issues.
Why should people vote for you?
The reason they should vote for me, number one, because I am not a politician. I am a public servant, and I am ready to do what it takes to make sure every community receives their fair share. And that they are seen, heard, and valued, because I am going to do. I have no axe to grind.
I hear that a lot. You know, I'm not a politician, but the day you're elected, you are.
Absolutely.
What happens? I mean, so the thing is that if you previously served in an elected position, you're not worthy of this other position. I'm not clear as to what you're trying to say.
Well, what that means is I do not have a history of a political background, a family, or legacy. I live in the community as a citizen, like everyone else that's running for this office. But I come with a fresh new view that nobody that has run against me in this office has done.
And what is that? What is that view? What is that view?
No one has a view of anything. There's no added, let me say, how do I say it? I am going to ensure that every citizen has a fair share and a voice in the community. I'm bringing nothing to the table but myself. And it's all about them and other stuff. And this is about me and serving my constituents. That's it.
Well, I can appreciate that you want to represent the constituents that you represent. Unfortunately, that position is a little bit misleading in my view, just one humble person's opinion, because you're one of seven members. And most of the issues that you will vote on will be impactful of the entire parish, not from a parochial perspective of just District 1. I hear these sound bites, but when you articulate the view, do you think there's something special about that others don't articulate the same thing?
No, I'm just going to be my authentic self. I have nothing to do but serve. That's my whole thing, and there's nothing more to it. And I. You know, I'm a team player. I've been on a mission team. I'm a team player, and that's all to it. And I've always worked for the best interest of the whole, whether I was on a missionary, as a missionary, as a teacher, as a mother, as a community servant, as a volunteer with CASA, no matter what I did, it was for the whole. And I'm bringing that to the table.
You bring something unique to this council, your ability to speak Spanish. What are you hearing from the Hispanic community?
They are so excited. They are ecstatic because there's someone who they believe is going to be able to speak and understand their culture and hear their voices.
And have they actually articulated that they have been let down by previous leadership, or what are you specifically hearing?
Never. I've never had that conversation. They're just focusing on me being there for them.
Final thoughts?
I am so excited that this opportunity has presented itself, and I am going to bring my best self to ensure that the entire district, as I said, I'm not trying to just, this is not just words, that they are seen, they are heard, they are valued, and I will advocate for every community, for all the people. And so I'm just asking that you give me a chance to make you proud.
Andrea Emanuel, congratulations to you and best of luck to you as you enter the general election runoff on May 3rd, 2025. Thank you for joining us. Good luck.
Thank you. The pleasure's mine. Thank you.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. The regular session of the Louisiana State Legislature commences Monday, April 14th, and there are some big issues that will be presented there. And here to talk to us about it is Cameron Henry, the president of the Louisiana State Senate. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. How you doing, buddy?
A lot of issues coming your way. What do you think are some of the bigger issues that y'all are going to grapple with this year?
Well, I mean, the budget is always, you know, is always an issue. It always is, takes up a lot of our time. That's number one, as always. I think the restructuring, reworking of DOTD and how we put that organization on a better path to success, obviously we'll always be looking focused on car insurance and homeowners insurance, those two issues. I don't know if we're going to have to tackle anything dealing with redistricting. That's going to be based on when some court decisions come down, but hopefully we won't have to thwart that. But that's kind of in the back of everybody's mind a little bit. And then, excuse me, all the adjustments that are being made on the federal side, how that's going to affect specifically LDH. Obviously, we saw some issues with FEMA yesterday. So those are in the back of my mind as well, to see when we're going to flush out what actually D.C. is doing with grants and funding for state government.
Let's start there. How much of an impact do you think that's going to have? I mean, you know, when we're talking about tweaking Medicaid and a third of our folks that live in this state are on Medicaid or some form of Medicaid, that's got to be a big concern, huh?
Oh yeah, that's one of the major concerns that we have, and I've spoke to a couple members of our delegation about it. Is that when you reduce funding for, excuse me, a little under weather, when you reduce funding for services, that doesn't mean that the requirement for the service goes away. It just means the federal government's no longer going to pay for it, and obviously we're going to need the state to step in. Those type of adjustments can have a major impact on our budget. As you know, LDH is about half of our budget. Budget is about $40 billion. LDH takes up 20, and the majority of LDH's budget is federal. So that the services go away, the problem still exists. The need for that service still exists. So that's when the state has to step in and rework their budget, reprioritize their budget to where those services can still be provided.
And a lot of people don't realize, Cameron, and correct me if I'm wrong, these dollars that come from the federal government relative to Medicaid come down to the state, and you guys at the state level craft the kind of program that we're going to have with those dollars and what we're going to offer, right?
Yeah, there's usually some specific restrictions or things that you must do, and then we can alter them to fit the needs of our state compared to what the needs of another state may be.
The but governor has put...
It's worrisome. It's worrisome, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, the uncertainty, because it hasn't fully revealed itself yet, right? And you don't even know if that's going to occur during your session.
Well, that's the other problem we have, is most other states, they start session in January. So we won't have any idea what changes were made. Now, hopefully, if they make these changes, they'll be implemented over time, maybe over 3 to 5 years. Ideally even longer, and we'll be able to adjust our five-year forecast to reflect what they did. So no need to panic, but our delegation is going to work smart across the aisle, so we'll be in a good spot when it all settles. We just don't know when it's going to settle.
The FEMA cuts that you talked about seem to be a lot more accelerated than a 3 to 5 year plan, right?
Yes, that's So they cut $87 million from LDH last week, I believe. So there's some cuts going on now. Excuse me again. There's some cuts going on now, but then that the Medicaid is the one that's kind of lingering for everybody as could be the most devastating. But I believe, if I remember, Senator Kennedy and maybe even Senator Cassidy were talking about maybe trying to reverse that 282. I think is what it was, 282 million. So hopefully they can get to work on that for us.
Absolutely. The governor yesterday went out front and even made insurance a more heightened issue than it was before by saying that, you know, he thinks that he's going to be able to move the needle here. Your thoughts as we go into this session, how do you see this developing?
Well, on the homeowner side, we did a lot of bills last year. The Fortified Roof Program is working. It just takes time. And what my constituents, which you're one of, are tired of is every year we change the laws, but we really don't see a movement in our insurance as it relates to homeowners. And it's just, you just get frustrated because it's a consistent problem that we all have to deal with. On the auto side, again, same issue. We're going to make some changes on it, but you have to have that balance of how much authority, how much power do you want to cede to the insurance company that prevents you from taking action if you actually have to call in your policy, right? Whether it's a car wreck where you're actually injured or your house gets hit by a hurricane or a flood, all those things are possible. We're just trying to find that balance, and it's very difficult to work with all sides evenly to try to figure out what we can do to lower insurance. Because if you ask the insurance folks, will this lower my insurance? Well, maybe. When? Eventually. And then we change the law again, and we change the law again. And we're continuing to change the law and not seeing any movement on insurance whatsoever. But we're not. This isn't something you give up on. You continue to try. We're going to continue to work with everybody. But you have to bring everybody to the table on this, and that's kind of lacked in the past, and we took a different strategy this year. So hopefully we can get some movement. Like, I don't enjoy paying what I pay for car insurance, and I definitely don't enjoy it. But I pay for homeowners insurance, so we're all on this one together.
Yeah, and you have kids that you're going to be paying for soon, so you definitely don't enjoy
it. I'm paying for two of them to drive right now. I think it'd be cheaper if I just gave them an Uber account.
Yeah,
just no doubt around with that.
I was a little surprised. The governor said something yesterday, and maybe I misunderstood, but he said something about the regulatory authority that the insurance commissioner has at the present time is less than most other commissioners around the country. And I remember when Tim Temple ran that he said, you know, regulatory authority by my office is frowned upon by the insurance companies. They would rather the market dictate where this is going to go. And if we do that, we over time anticipate lower rates. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, we've had time and we don't have any lower rates. I think the governor's going to put some, I think that's, he wants to look at what other states are doing. And if other states' insurance commissioners have a little bit more ability to clamp down on insurance companies raising rates or just double check why they're doing it, push back a little bit. I mean, I don't know why that would be a problem. I would expect you would, insurance commissioner would want all tools available. So if it allows him to go in and look at somebody's books to see why are rates going up, what has caused this in Louisiana for ABC company? I don't know whether that's necessary. No one explains to me why that'd be a bad idea. Of course, insurance companies don't want it, but I mean, I can appreciate that. But man, we're struggling around here. And if other states can do it, if the insurance commissioner has that ability in other states and their rates are lower, then they've been able to find a way to do it. So let's have us do the same thing.
Do you anticipate having a really broad and full-fledged debate on this issue when we're talking about tort reform in the auto world, you know, collateral source and all that goes along with that? You know, it almost is a claimant-by-claimant, you know, situation. Everyone brings to the table a different set of circumstances.
Well, I mean, you have to have a robust conversation about it because you don't want to just focus on the bad actors, right? We can change the law all day long, and bad actors are going to find a way to go around it, but that hurts the policyholders, the good actors, someone who actually gets in a wreck and is injured, or his house gets destroyed in a hurricane or damaged, between the insurance company and the adjuster, we're trying to change laws to go after a very small group of individuals who have found a way around the system that exists. So we have to watch that, because you don't want to adversely affect every single policyholder in Louisiana. Everyone wants lower insurance rates. But when something happens to you, you want to be able to take action against your insurance company and your adjuster. But we have to balance that. We have to make sure that we don't cede all that authority to the insurance company. And then constituents would call and say, the adjuster, the adjuster told my roof, they're going to give me $5,000 for my roof. The contractor told me it was going to be $15,000. What am I supposed to do? You've got to put a process in place, not necessarily a legal one, but a process in place where maybe you don't have to hire an attorney to do something like that. You can have your construction guy get on the phone with me, with the adjuster and work through it together. And that's not possible right now in Louisiana. We need to make it that way.
That would be a big help for sure. Let's pivot real quick. The failure of Amendment 2, I think, has caused a number of situations within this session that are going to need to be dealt with. One being the LA Gator program. The governor is seeking $94 million in his budget. I think you were quoted as saying you were surprised by that, and it's double what y'all were willing to do, and you thought y'all had an agreement. Where does this go from here?
Well, I mean, Amendment number 2 failing, what it did is it did a lot, which probably was one of the reasons that it didn't pass. We definitely had too much in there. Excuse me. One of the things it was going to do is going to free up some reoccurring money that we would have used for programs like this if the legislature wanted to do it, as well as the teacher pay raises and things like that. We'll work through it all. I mean, the Gator program is one of many things that wants more money. State police needs some money. Department of Children and Family Services definitely needs some money. So we have a lot of needs out there, and we're going to address those with the money that we have. And then maybe in May, our Revenue Estimating Committee will meet and give us a little bit more money as well. But we're going to work through it all. I'm not terrified about anything. I don't panic. For the Gator program specifically, they've told us how many people have applied, which is good to know. What they haven't told us is how many seats are available, like how many schools are available to take a child that's in one school and move them to another. And that's really what we need to find out, is how many empty seats are in Louisiana for these students, because you don't want to give false hope that we have $94 million to pay for it, but you only have 100 seats available in Louisiana. So we have to work through all that.
The NOLA was reporting that there's 30,000 applicants that meet the eligibility criteria that have applied since March 1st. Obviously, the funding that's being talked about wouldn't support 30,000, right?
No, it would not. But we also don't know whether we have 30,000 seats available.
Right.
And this is an outside group doing this, right? This is I believe they're from Florida that puts on these programs. So we're hiring someone to do this, which is a concern of mine, because I didn't think that was necessary to do. And we were originally going to only focus on the voucher kids, which is about 6,000. So that's the number we're probably going to focus on if there's 6,000 seats available in Louisiana for these kids to go to school.
Do you have any insight as to whether or not that number is available? That seems like a big number to me.
We're going to have some meetings in the next couple of weeks with them to figure that out, and they're going to have to show us. I mean, if the seats are available, when we can move forward with what we can afford. If they're not, they need to stop talking about all the things they would like to do when you don't have the seats available, giving false hope to kids, and that's detrimental to them.
Cameron, some members are putting in bills that are taking some of what was being provided for in Amendment number 2 and putting it in legislation. What is the likelihood of that making its way through the process? One being the doubling up of the exemption for those 65 and older for state income taxes.
Well, again, Amendment number 2 paid for things, reduced certain things, but then also covered the cost of it. So you can't just take the parts out that save money. You also have to put the parts in there that was going to free up some locked up state general fund. So if we can afford to do it, of course we will. But obviously, that's going to be a case by case basis of what's the short term impact, what's the long term impact, and can we afford it based on all the other needs that everybody wants to do.
Do we have an idea of what that particular piece of legislation, the fiscal note, may be on that, or no?
No, I don't. I haven't seen the fiscal note on it. Once we get into session, and that bill, I don't know whether this bill's in the House or the Senate, but that's something that will materialize over the first month of session, so we can figure out what that for the last 3 weeks, we'll be able to narrow down everybody's focus on what we want to spend money on.
As it relates to the budget, any issues there that are causing you significant concern?
Well, we're still the amount of money that I know we need. I know the state police needs about $50 million. I know Children and Family Services needs about $15 million. Those are going to be two pretty high priorities for us. LDH probably is going to need some more money, but hopefully we can continue to work with our D.C. delegation so that number is small as possible. And then obviously that we want to do something with the teachers. But, you know, that was one of the amendment number two is going to free up reoccurring money. And I would like to give the teachers a permanent raise, so we don't have to do this every single year. And we're not going to go back to the jingle days of budgeting where you use one-time money for a reoccurring expense. And everyone says, well, the stipend is not reoccurring. I said, well, we gave it to them last year. We gave it the year before. We want to continue giving it to them every year. It's pretty much reoccurring. That's by the definition of it.
It walks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
Right? Yes, and it's not fair to do the teachers. You know, you shouldn't have to come to Baton Rouge every single year and beg for a stipend. So we've got to do better with that. Hopefully we can make some changes with the money that we have tied up this session and be able to move forward with a pay raise of some sort, maybe a small one this year, if anyone at all, and then maybe get something back on the ballot in the future and see if we can get a better explanation to folks and they have more faith in what we're trying to do.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're under the weather. You stayed the course, and we appreciate that. I know the listeners do as well, and hope you get better soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you, buddy. Have a good one.
Thank you, sir. Cameron Henry, President of the Louisiana State Senate. We will be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us. So the takeaway for me with the president of the Louisiana State Senate, Cameron Henry, and I think he was brutally honest about this, is the uncertainty of what's going to happen at the federal level and the funding and financing of a lot of what they do, the significant amount of certain political agencies' budget that comes from the federal government, and whether or not the timing of this will reveal itself for them to take some remedial action while in session to deal with that. If there are situations, I think, that are dire enough, and I didn't get a chance to ask this question, the contemplation of a special session to have to deal with it. So it's not the greatest place to be in. And having said that, I thought otherwise he was optimistic that they were going to be able to handle a lot of the issues that are being presented. I really liked his answers as it related to some of what the governor was talking about. It made sense. I don't know what other states and what authority the insurance commissioner has, but he's right. No one is happy with the amount of premium that they're paying in auto insurance, homeowners insurance, or otherwise. It has become a real drag on our economy. I think it has helped promote this out-migration that we have experienced here in the state of Louisiana. That's not a good thing. The cost of living obviously is up because of these areas of concern that we have about the premium base. And it has to change sooner rather than later. And I know that these things go in cycles, and it's not going to be anything that someone's going to present a silver bullet that's going to change this. And that's why I asked. I mean, it seemed like a kind of a silly throwaway question, but we really need to be serious about having a robust conversation about tort reform and how we go about doing that. You know, when you look at, they say we need to adopt, the Texas plan. Well, Texas basically has damage caps. So you can only, recover so much money. They don't seem to be overly liberal to me knowing what folks experience, you know, in personal injury cases. And it seems as though they have a cap on non-economic damages, which is, you know, physical pain and suffering, mental anguish, loss of enjoyment of life, inconvenience, disfigurement, those types of things that are life-altering for many people. So it gets back to that balance, and it'll be interesting to see. And I suggest that everyone follow this to see where this goes. What we're going to try and do next week for certain is have both sides on, a trial lawyer and someone from the insurance industry, to talk about these issues and how their viewpoint is and what they see as important and not important. So we're going to try and pull that together. We'll be right back. Stay with us.